and you can sleep. You're sitting down to dress and you're a mess. You look in the mirror. You look in your eyes. Say you far as they can, they don't just care. They stood on the stairs, laughing at your airs. Your mother's dead, she said, don't be afraid. Your mother's dead, you're on your own. She's in her bed. Everybody goes, leaving those who fall behind. Everybody goes as far as they can, they don't just care. You're wasted face, you're a sad-eyed lie, you're a holocaust.
Damn, that's a downer. Excuse me, Big Star, Holocaust from Third Sister Lovers. Yeah, I don't know why, but I had to play that. I just felt it. What can I say? Amuleto before that with Urlicht, and Bichin Bajas with Bajas Ragas from Vibraquatic from 2011. That was everything. And that's it for me. Stay tuned for Miracle Nutrition right here on WFMU. East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I'll see you next week. Stay tuned.
To Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now as we take or have. Well, we could take something. You can take whatever you want. Take it. All right. Now we're going to have an adventure. a smell adventure.
The year is 2013. Hardy White has been on the radio at WFMU for 1 year, and people still think that he's a folksy and wise outsider artist who's that's before they realized I was a total cheeseball. That was the little sweet spot there. Oh, yes, I am a total cheeseball. I am covered with nuts, even. I'm a nutty, nut-covered cheeseball like you find at your grandmother's cocktail party. And nobody wants to be the first one to cut their writs into it. Cut their writs. That's my new slogan. He makes you want to cut your writs. You take your Ritz cracker and you dip it into the cheese ball. Well, sir, I'm that cheese ball, and your attention is my Ritz cracker. And anything that I'm going to heap things on it, they're just serving suggestions, things to do with your attention. And I'm glad that you've aimed it at me right now, because I have a tale to tell. Oh, my goodness. You remember the old 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea? I had that story record when I was a kid. And I have a tale to tell. And I was like, I'm so excited. Even the record was in CinemaScope. So you had to have, your record player had to be extra wide. So the year is 2013. And I am, I get a message that the band MGMT would like to contact me. And I said, well, I don't know who that is, but I'm not being naive. I just don't, I should listen to more records that were made after Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. And I say Tijuana Brass because that's the era that I enjoy. I'm sorry, I just do. So I was contacted and they said, we would like you to be on the flip side of this single, and I'd never heard that word. I said, is that a Danish word? Because I know sometimes they'll throw a K in front of something. And they said, well, no. Single, it's a portmanteau word. I said, oh, portmanteau. I've never been there, but I've always liked to visit. I understand that the old Prisoner TV series was filmed there. No, it's the flip side of a single. I don't know if I'm capable of that. I say yes to anything because I think I am, because I'm overconfident. And that's why you know this is going to be a great story. Because any story that begins with someone saying, being overconfident and saying yes, oh, it's going to be lovely. You're going to feel better about yourself, I think, at the end of that story. And so they wanted to do this flip side. So they had this song, Alien Days, and that was going to go on the A side. And then, should you flip your cassette over, now, this is 2013. This is after cassettes. So I don't know. It almost like, I don't know what the equivalent is. It's like we're putting out an 8-track or something like that. We're putting out vinyl, but it's not really vinyl. It's like hard plastic that shatters. And also, it's a 78 or something like that. Oh, it's a speed my granddad invented. So I don't know if you're ever going to be able to play it. Actually, it's CinemaScope. So how does that work? Well, the thing you record is expansive, but they shrink it down so that it can fit on that medium, and then it's expanded again. You could do that, by the way. Anyway, so I've get this thing. I said, what am I going to do on the flip side? Because those are the first thing I thought is I will eef, maybe. What's eefing? Remember old hee-haw show? There, one guy would do hambone, which is where you keep a rhythm on your by slapping your thigh. And I would love to have a whole album with all the drums are just thigh slapping in different ways. There's so many ways to hit a thigh or slap them against one another, and it's wonderfully percussive. Somebody, you could put a little cymbal on each one of your buttocks and then wiggle in something. Come together like that. So, I've distracted myself somehow. I don't know what happened. I wanted to be on track here. I'm going to get back on track. So, I was going to eef, maybe. And eefing is like when you go,
So the guy was ham boning, and then there was another fellow going, heaved, 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 heaved. I can't do it. So well, that's one of the reasons I didn't. So I get a lot of ideas. If you ask me to say, Hardy, I want you to do something, there's going to be the first five things on the list are things that I can't even do. So I was like, I will do a marble, maybe a marble sculpture, classical marble sculpture. Now, wait now. Hang on now. I can't do that. So then it comes down to the things I can do. And that was speak extemporaneously, which is it a talent even? Or is it like something like an extra arm? And so well, you're going to be really popular on the midway at the carnival because of the extra arm. And you feel like, oh, God, you know, it's nothing I really did. So I thought, what can I do? I'll speak extemporaneously. So I went and got they sent me a sample of it. I felt really excited. It hadn't been released yet. They said, don't let anybody hear this. Like, I don't have anybody to show. And then, so I listened to words. I go, what I'll do, I know what I'll do. I will synchronize my part on the other side of the record, just like The Wizard of Oz is synchronized with that Warrant album. And I thought, that's what I'll do. So I'll go and I get the lyrics. And then the thing begins with the word sometimes. I say, I'll begin with sometimes. And then every once in a while, I'll hear a word and I'll say it too and then go off in another direction. So I think I even had the song playing in my ear. I have it playing in my ear. Now, this sounds like conceptual art, Hardy. You're right. Hardy is always conceiving of things, this, and then it's the executing that is the problem. Penal systems encounter this challenge. You know, it's in the execution that everything really goes wrong, because conception is lovely. And when you're just thinking about that, say, this is what a wonderful baby this is going to be, and then it's Ted Bundy. So I thought, what am I really in? What's my number one interest, and what do I like to speak about on the radio? If I said this is a radio show about anything, what would it be about? Come on, Hardy, sum it up. You're going to have to sum it up for the Google or anything. It's about memory. I'm very interested in memory. I believe it was probably my grandmother's failing and dying that got me interested, because her memory went first, and I had to wrestle with the idea of identity vis-a-vis one's memory. Once they're gone, who are you? So I thought about memory a lot, how we store them. I made friends who were neuroscientists who would give me insight into why it is we remember. What about our senses, our vision, our hearing? Now, not all of us have them, and not all of us have them in equal working order. And so that's something to think about, too. The brain, a dark, isolated little Dalek. It's like that. It's like, you know, on the Doctor Who, where they have the calamari living in the robot shells. That's your brain. And all it has, that little stem sticks out. Say, what's going on out there? Like a periscope. And so I thought about senses, and I thought, well, there's a sense that really, really interests me. And because it's a sense that when triggered, triggers memories that you can't necessarily recall without that triggering, and that is smell. So smells, as you know, can bring you back to a place without you involuntarily. I guess this is the word I'm looking for. Smell and you go, oh my God, my great-grandmother's house. And my great-grandmother's house was a combination of floral, something like not lavender, but like a violety kind of smell. I don't know whether it was something in her perfume. And then the gas, like gas stove gas, because it always felt like the gas stove was kind of leaking. And they put a smell in gas so that you don't go, do you got a gas leak? Like that. So it always had that low key old 20s house, right? So it smelled like flowers and gas leak. So that's a very, very specific combination. And it fascinated me from the time that I was young that there were things that come together like that that just put you back to a place. Now, you can see a thing. shut your eyes and sort of imagine it, can you? So look at your cup. Now shut your eyes, you kind of still see your cup. In fact, if you just were looking at your cup, it's kind of burned onto the nerves that were doing the work. But you can also think about your cup in dreams. I was dreaming about my cup last night, and it come to me, and I'd seen it just as good, and I heard it. That's another thing. So if you were to just sit here right now and think without humming, the association's Never My Love, which is one of the things that's playing over and over in my head, like a sort of melodic tinnitus. So I'm sure it's a brain damage problem or something, but there's a couple songs that just go on. It's fine. It's fine. I don't mind. And one is Never My Love. But it's going right now. And I got to talk to you. My brain's going, Never My Love. But it's okay. That's all right. So these smells, though, if I were to say, I'm going to smell that smell in my grandmother's house or great-grandmother's house, I can't get it. Well, it's not there. I can't quite imagine it. And so I'm a little dependent. So I go around smelling things because I want them to be evocative. I'm trying to get them to evoke. Ooh! So I thought I would do a narration about smell, and I believe I did, and I haven't revisited because I was traumatized because it was the first time that strangers hated me. It's just they have a lot of fans, you know, and so I was exposed to a lot of people that weren't involuntarily, which is unlike FMU listeners a lot of times, you know, because they know what they're getting. You come to the fair, you know what you're getting. I love it. That's why I love, can I just give you a big warm hug right now, WFMU family listeners, and you know what, you know who you are. And if you're listening, that's you. Because if you're still listening, even if you're still listening and you hate it, gosh, we need you and love you so much. I hate this. And we've got those people, and we need you. I think there are probably some listeners who hate listen to almost every show there is. And so you know what they're not doing is they don't really hate it. It isn't about that. It's about because we understand all blessed souls here. Everybody's looking and struggling for something. And if this is going to, FMU is going to be a home for the misfits, then all the dysthemic negatories, they're welcome here too. They get a big hug and get their hands off of me, but they keep coming back. So that's how you know to love them. Anyway, so I decided I'm going to speak about smells and stuff on the back of this record, and that's the end of that story, but it's a beginning of another story. And that has to do with, first of all, I said some things I think are going to upset you at the beginning of the show. Say, we still think you're folksy and wise, Hardy. Yes, but, you know, I've tried my life whole, flip that, I've tried my whole life to blur a line that I saw drawn in art. I've spent most of my life in North Florida, and my education is mixed, you know, so I'm not from the swamp in a cabin. And I don't have a PhD, nor did I go to an Ivy League school. I went to kudzu schools, kudzu-covered schools. What's kudzu? That's our ivy. That's ivy for people who are living where no human should be living. It's an invasive exotic from China. It's thriving. So anyway, It is sort of lovely the way it smothers and kills the native flora. So I see people make art all the time in all different contexts for all different people, mostly for their community. So mostly for other people. And you know how it is. You get it comes out of maybe being in band. So you be in a band. You have a thing. You go, boy, my band's kind of bad. We should wear hats, or there should be skits. So then you start doing performance arts or things like that, and then people come to your show and say, I don't have an act, but I have a hat that's very exotic. And they start coming and say, I have a whole head. And then, you know, big hand person comes to your show and everything, and then all of a sudden you've got art and people making art and everything in different levels of sophistication. The thing it shares is it's usually intrinsically entertaining and amusing. Now that became my mantra. And people said, stop chanting that. I'd be go, intrinsically entertaining and amusing, intrinsically entertaining and amusing, intrinsically entertaining and amusing, intrinsically entertaining and amusing, intrinsically entertaining and amusing. Oh, I'm starting to get into, I'm sorry, I want to do some math rhythm. So what I required was not that the concept be great or it be sophisticated or display to me any kind of previous knowledge, art that has been done or has not been done. Just, you know, amuse or intrigue or baffle. And so I got used to that, you know, and people of all different types and backgrounds, baffling and amusing. And then, you know, I realized that there were these words for, that there was insider and outsider artists, that there were folk artists, that there was something called art brut, and all that kind of thing. And I was going, what? And then I saw people, you know, pretending to be a little more unsophisticated than they are, making art for condescending sophisticates. I'm sorry. It's kind of what I saw. I'm sorry, just going to say it. I didn't mention it, but I think it's controversial. It's completely not. But listen, so anyway, I was like, well, you know, who am I? What am I? Am I an outsider artist? Now I realize, yes, I am an outsider artist. And how I know, because I've told you this many times, if Irwin buys you dinner ever, then you're an outsider artist. I'm sorry. It's okay. But so this idea of entertaining the people around me, community, started to become more of and blurring the line, and became more of an obsession for me. And so there was in my life, and everything I do to you, with you, there's an undoing. I like to do and then undo in a way, and so that things stay strange. And I think I'm not having to try to remain outside of broader trends or things like that. I'm just over here smelling things and trying to remember things. Now, I think a lot of times the sound might be the best memory. What about touch memory? Can you remember being touched? Ah, I just did. I'm sorry. I just startled myself. I had this memory of somebody coming up behind me and touching me. It was really vivid, and I felt a hand on my back. I didn't, thank goodness. That would be really horrible if you just started, like, I mean, it'd be horrible, not horrible. Mostly people wouldn't leave the house for a variety of reasons if you could imagine touch vividly. I started to think more about smells then. And I discovered perfume. Now, perfume is very interesting. I wasn't really into it. I remember when I was a young man, I was like, I got to somehow scent myself. And as you know, if you've never known me for very long, I'm very into seasonal air fresheners and discerning different pine scents. And I was in there into that long before I knew even what was going on. All I knew is that I had very specific tastes, very specific smell memories and everything, that, and I had opinions about, I'm saying, to say the product, because it doesn't matter, I had Glade issues with them changing their holiday fragrances every year. Anyway, let's move on. So that's the interest in perfumes and smells, and everything starts to build. And you know, with the internet, you're able to educate yourself a little bit, and you start to look into things and smell things. And I did, and I discovered all these sort of fragrances and things to smell, and that you could get little samples of things. I want smell samples, thought I. I will go around sniffing them, trying to see if they evoke anything. So I did this, and then once you discover this perfume world, people are making all sorts of crazy, crazy smells and things that evolve. So you can take a one of these magic mixtures and put it on your skin, and it will smell like something, and then it will kind of change, and then it will maybe change again. And it's just like, it's like moving through somewhere, you know, maybe moving through a market. And you say, I'm moving through a market in Morocco, and I just got, I don't know, a puss full of tarragon or something. No, I don't know. What is it? Don't be like paprika. Oh, God. I've never been to a real spice market, but I imagine that I would like, oh, this is a little too much. But anyway, so I started smelling these perfumes, and they smell like a whole range of things, you know, like flowers and fruit and wood and anything that you can imagine, anything that has a smell, really. So I started looking into it a little more. And this idea that people were making basically like sort of smell paintings became fascinating to me. So this idea I had of my great-grandmother's house is actually my great-grandmother's house. Oh, my! I'm going to digress just a moment to describe my great-grandmother's house, which was sort of like a Sears Craftsman, if you know what that is, a 20s Craftsman in Haddonfield, New Jersey, Haddon Avenue. And she, it was great. It had in the hall, there was a print of the Contented Man of Capri. Have you ever seen that picture? It's like, is that Santa Claus smoking a pipe? No, that is the Contented Man of Capri. And I don't know why every 20s house had, I don't know whether they were giving them out. Was, you know, the Coolidge campaign or something? With every vote for Calvin Coolidge, you will receive the Contented Man of Capri and his companion, Lady Santa, Mrs. Santa. So those two paintings, this man and woman, and you thought, I don't know, it's just New Jersey? I don't know. I think it was everywhere, though. So there's a Contented Man of Capri. And then, you know, things, everything smelled like purple flowers and, like I said, gas, but also slightly musty. Because, you know, the house was 40-some years old or whatever. I thought you said it was the 20s. I was a little boy. Oh, I was just a little boy. I didn't know nothing. My great-grandmother answered the door, say, come in. She didn't talk like that. I don't remember how she talked. Scat! Scat! Like that. I remember when she'd bunch you out of the kitchen, she'd say that. But she lived in that house there with my Uncle Bumps, longtime employee of Campbell Soup in Camden, New Jersey. And he was her daughter's ex-husband. And they both owned the house. And when my great aunt split from him, nobody could agree really whose house is. They lived there together until both of them died. So that's the house, and that's the smell I kept looking for. And why would you look for that memory in the perfume aisle, Hardy? That's very strange. You know what it is? I think what it is it led me to art, smell art. And that hadn't been something that occurred to me, really. The smells at a show or performance had been important to me. That's happened. Everybody's that. Like, try to go to some kind of hippie concert and not run in to go, oh, that's a, what's that? Is that sage or incense or patchouli or what is it? And you go, yes, 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 yes. So that's been going on a long time, too. But what happened, Hardy? Science. In the 19th century, they were able to synthesize certain smell chemicals. Among them, coumarin, which is synthesized tonka bean smell, kind of a woody vanilla. And this became an ingredient in one of the first perfumes using these, which was a perfume called Fougère Royale by Aubijon. And I have no notes. Sometimes I have notes. I had to remember that. How do you remember that? Well, what's a fougère? Fougère is interesting. So it's a fern. So their idea was, let's make something that smells not exactly like a fern, but how you think a fern might smell. That's very interesting. And so they create this this fougère, which is has lavender and oak moss and this coumarin. So those things combine, give you fern and some others, throw in some other junk. But it was being able to synthesize these. So why is that important? Why is that important? Well, let's say I wanted to smell like roses. A lot of people do. A lot of people have roses or vanilla for that matter. Have you ever priced either one of them? To make, get enough rose petals to make rose oil, it's pounds and pounds. It's very expensive. But if you could find the chemical that gives you that rose smell so that when it gets up in your nostril, you're going to go, that's a rose. And you go, oh, you thought it was a rose, but really it's geraniol or something. So this starts in the 19th century. So that's like in the 1870s or something. And it keeps going. And they find that we can take some of these chemicals, and if you combine them, maybe three, four, you can get like a third thing, an accord. So let's say you wanted to make, I want to smell like carnations. All right. Or like more accurately, how you think carnations smell. Exactly. So I will take something benzyl salicylate, which is I could be really spreading some wrong thing. Take notes, Hardy. A yellowy flower kind of smell, and then combine it with eugenol. What's eugenol? Eugenol is the smell of cloves. Cloves and yellow flowers? Yeah. So you take those things, and maybe you combine it with something that gives you a lily of the valley smell, and I forgot the name of the chemical because it's long, hydroxy citronella or something like that. And then maybe somebody's walking by and they have a there's a hippie walking by in the distance and you go, oh, and a whiff of patchouli. Yeah, I think now that smells like a carnation. So now you've got an accord. So there's different names for them based on what's in them. And I'm not coming up with them because that's not my point. My point is that these elements, you can combine them and make another thing. Oh, it's like having a palette. So it's just like Bob Ross. So yeah, I'm just going to take some of the blue. And now this blue over here. And now if I mix the blue with another color, I have sky. You know, I've just read that he knew he was ASMR. He knew that some people were just listening to him to nod off. And I came to that realization a long time ago. I used to hear from a listener before, pre-FMU days. And he said, I listened to your show to go to sleep. And then I heard he died. And I imagine maybe we died together. I mean, I didn't die, but he listened to me as he's perishing. That's not really the word. As he's moving on to the big radio broadcast, as he heads out towards that wonderful black hole that we are all being sucked into. And the other side of it, backwards world, where we have to do this all again, but in reverse. No, I don't think so. I remember in 2012 when I got fired from WFMU, like that. And it looks like the MGMT cassette caused it. Even if you go backwards, you go, what? Man, a year later, he's gone. I know. He must have really messed up. I know. People don't like smell stuff, maybe. Well, you know, oh, keep going with some perfumistry. Oh, I like it. Well, let's talk about vanillin. I think Jicky was the first perfume that had that in it. And that's artificial vanilla. And as you know, if you're ever going to do anything with vanilla, it's very expensive because it's that little pod, like an orchid pod or something. And then you cut it open, and it looks like bong resin, but it smells exquisite because it's vanilla, and it's just something about it. I love it. I love the smell. Most people do. Most humans like it. So, but very expensive, so that when they discovered they could make vanillin, and then you're soaking in it. It's everywhere. It's in everything. And we're going through a little phase where vanilla in perfumes is, again, making a big comeback, but in a what they call gourmand way, which is, so any perfume, the family of perfumes that smells like food is called a gourmand. So I like boozy gourmands. So I like things to smell like booze and fruit, or I smell like somebody spilled some rum on an apple pie, and maybe a little spice and stuff like that. Which is why I am very enamored with the House of Zherzhov's Tony Iommi's Monkey Special, which I find to be a very compelling fragrance. It is, actually. I love the house. What's that house stuff? Well, there are, I'm going to get, because I'm getting to somewhere, and just remember Chanel.
The Nazi?
Yes, remember that, though. So they have houses. There's design houses, right? So there's companies that make things, and maybe they make gowns or jewelry, and then they say, let's also make perfume. So they hire a perfumer, and then they put out perfumes, and they're designer perfumes. So, you know, Dior, Louis Vuitton, everything like that. So I am tired of making handbags. I want to make a smell.
Make a smell for us, Louis. Here it goes.
So they put out these things, but there's also what they call niche houses, which are perfumeries that are just perfumeries. So there's just a house that just does perfumes. And I'm not going to name... Quit naming niches. So I'm not going to name niche perfumes or anything, but there's ones that just make the perfume. So as we know, there's a certain designer named Chanel. And when they, in the 20s, things were getting like mod, you know, very mod. And they'd come up with a new synthesized chemical, aldehyde, you know, like formaldehyde. Well, it's not just formaldehyde, which I don't think is any... I bet there's some of that in somebody's... I've called this embalmed zombie. But there's these aldehydes, and what they are is they give like a... They're like a metallic version of different smells. And so there was this idea that you could sort of smell like the Chrysler Building, you know? Or some... in the 20s, that aesthetic of everything looking like the front of a car, very metal... You know, so, well, like let's make a robot orange. Like a robot, I want to smell like robot lemon, robot bergamot or something. And so they started to put these notes in your Chanel number 5. Why do they call it number 5? I don't know. I think because it's got civet in it. What's that? So there's certain... among the pleasant smells... Let's just be frank. A lot of people. So, I know there's kids listening. Hey, kids. I know this is impossible, but like a slightly animal poopy smell can be pleasant if in small doses. So a civet's a kind of wild cat and everything. So there's a little bit of you go, what's that note? And that's an animalic note or something. It smells like animal. I mean, sometimes the kids say something has a fecal note and we giggle and everything, but because of the human anatomy and the geography of human anatomy and things, this is a significant contributes. I'm trying to dance around things. Oh, bless you. So that can be in there too. There are a lot of parts of animals that used to go into perfume too, and that's a shame. I'm not for that. I don't want any animal on me, really. And that's just a personal thing. But least of all, castoreum, I think, which is, what's that? Well, two beavers are down. There's a beaver down by the river, and a monkey comes up to me and goes, "Man, I got bad news." He goes, "What?" He goes, "Well, I was, you know, when I was over at your house the other day, I was thinking the area right near your between your butt and your tail kind of smells like vanilla." Beaver's like, "No, oh no." He goes, "Yeah, you mean my castor sack? Yeah, your castor sack smells like kind of a musky vanilla, and I think it's pleasing." That means people are going to try to come take it. That's the worst thing, man. If you ever like smell your pinky and your pinky smells like roses, don't tell anybody, because some aliens will come and start harvesting your parts. So I want to smell like that. Person hand smells good in the fragrance of the Gorn. But so beware. And other things like that, you know, so the animal smells. Now, if you could synthesize the top of my dog's head, and I could smell that all day long. Or even like I don't really want to smell like a kid's head. Not a kid with lice. But like certain, there's a hair smell that can be nice and everything like that. I don't know if I'd put it on me. But boy, you could. But this idea, the Chanel in the mid-century then, have this modern metallic-y smell to things. So that went in. Now these days, has there been any kind of modern thing? I don't know. Nowadays, a lot of woods. Oh, I know something I can tell you. So, you know how they do that thing where you put the perfume on and it smells like different things at different times?
Yeah.
Like it's magic?
Yeah.
What if I told you it was about volatility and evaporation?
Yeah.
So, as you know, some chemicals are more volatile and evaporate faster, and then some things like oily resins and something get on you and go, "Man, again, I don't mean to summon the bong, but there's some stuff that could get on you and you go, wow, I still smell like sticky weed or something like that." Whereas the smell of lemons is fleeting. And so I put oranges on me. Why don't I smell like orange? Well, when you combine these things, some of the ones that are more volatile come out first and hit you, and then they evaporate and go away. And depending on at what rate they evaporate, that's how the smell changes. Until you're down to your base notes, which are some of your like resiny smells. So now I just smell like pencil shavings. Yeah, exactly. And agar wood. Agar wood? Or oud? Same thing. It is the same thing. Now, what's oud? Oud's really interesting. I'm not going to tell you the species of tree.
Because I forgot.
But there's a species of tree in, like, Southeast Asia that gets, it's not a very interesting tree. It doesn't smell like anything. So if you were, I'm going to go and buy one. It wouldn't matter. Well, it gets a sort of, like, bacteria or fungus in it, naturally. And then when you cut the wood, you see these spaces, like these streaks of dark resinous wood where I guess it's tried to heal itself against this fungus, and what it's created is this incensey, more intense sandalwoody kind of, it's hard to describe what it is, but it's very interesting and pleasant to people and highly desirable and has been for a long time. The problem is that it's all gone. They just harvested it all. So now, thank goodness, like Roquefort cheese, like blue cheese, instead of just waiting for this thing to get in it, they can put it in themselves now. So you can still you can infect the trees on purpose. You still have to wait a while, and it's still not cheap, but it's cheaper than, you know, waiting for a whale to cough up ambergris. So that's another thing. Used to get out of whales, used to vomit up or poop out, no one's really sure, a big chunk of this white stuff that is the result of the guts of the whale protecting itself against the beaks and other undigestible parts of the giant squids in its diet. So it eats this giant squid, and it gets to the beak or the cuttle, and it's like, I can't handle this, and it makes some kind of pearly, kind of gooky substance around, which hardens, comes out, and you have ambergris. And it washes up on the shore. And I won't go into the politics of it and where it's legal and everything, but it can be. Don't pick it up in this country because you'll go to jail. But they'd be able to synthesize that smell, and you can smell that if you've ever smelled something called ambroxan, and it smells like, I don't know, it's hard to, maybe like the ocean, maybe like metal, maybe like, I don't know, I keep coming back to it. I like the smell of it, and I really encourage you to sort of smell things separately, and then you'll start smelling them in things, because this stuff is in everything that you use every day. So if you have anything that's scented, there's a lot of these chemicals that appear in those scented things because they're pretty standard. And so if you just see something like goes by, like, you know, benzyl salicylate, you go, oh, that sounds crazy. But it's just this flowery smell. And so you should start looking things up. That some things that sound scary are just like a molecule that smells like violet, and it's very interesting to me, and especially because our world is surrounded by these things, and I like to know what's going on around me, but I also like to sort of appreciate the art in small places, and you don't think of it as being art, but all these things are. For instance, there's poetry at your kitchen sink. Because if you've got any of these hand cleaners, any of this dishwashing soap, they, other than sort of lavender, they always have very poetic descriptions of what they are. Clean linen. And that is a legit smell in perfumery and everything, or fresh air. You say, well, what was that smell like even? Well, there you go. There's these aroma chemicals. And I find them extremely interesting, because they start popping up, and I start having memories, and I increase my memories. It's a reference thing. For instance, let's say you're watching you go back in time at PBS or something, and you say, Sister bless her heart, what's her name? Sister likes art a lot. I wish I could remember her name. Or British fellow with the Polish name. I'm really not trying to be flippant. I just, for some reason, I'm blanking. Anyway, they do these art appreciation shows, and you watch one of their art appreciation shows, and they show you paintings, and they go, this is, you know, the Holbein or something. And Sister What's-Her-Name says, you know, you'll notice that Bouguereau always does this. So then you go to the museum. Now you see stuff that you might not have seen. It has to do with reference and memory. And you bring your memories everywhere with you, and the world starts to pop in a way. So your curiosity can work for you to start accumulating these beautiful memory libraries, where you start remembering things that maybe aren't really important or necessary. They seem almost frivolous. You start paying attention. And then when you go and you have other experiences, boom, they're there. And you say, this reminds me. And you're constantly reminded and comforted. It's like you rehearse, you know. It's rehearsing. Smelling is rehearsing. Seeing is rehearsing. It's all a beautiful way of interacting with our world. And I want to find better and more profound ways to see. And I mean see in the sense of all the senses. So I expand my smell, and I say, how can I take, if we're talking poetry, and we're making links between smells and feelings, let's keep going. And what are the smells of the soul? I mean, what are we doing? What are we trying to distill? What are we looking for with our nose? What's our nose looking for? Pleasure,
life sustenance. You know that deep breath you take maybe in the woods, you go, my cousin's, what is it even, my cousin's ex-husband's parents have a cabin, and they let us use it, and we go up there, and it's a beautiful country, and I go out the morning there with my coffee in my hand, and I just throw it away, and the reason is because I smell the air that comes into me there. It's just the beautiful odor. It's the odor, it's the stink of decay and life at the same time going on. And it really is like the smell of growing and rotting are just all right there together. Have you ever been to a farm? You ever been to a farm? Go to a farm. You should go to a farm. Go to a farm regularly. And I know I sound Victorian. You must inhale the aroma of farms on a regular basis. Try to smell huff a cow. This is, when I did my presentation on Thomas Wedgwood, who I believe invented photography, Tom Wedgwood, was encouraged to huff meat and lived at a butcher as a way of trying to combat his chronic abdominal pain, and which I think was probably, ulcerative colitis or something. Oh, bless, I wish I could hug everybody in the past. I'm hugging them. I guess the living need the hugging most. So I'm going to hug them. Turn around, hug the living. Made a mistake. I'm sorry. I was hugging the dead by mistake. They're fine. The dead, they're overrepresented in everything. The dead are overrepresented in government. We are absolutely can't do this. Dead said don't. That's a good, also, if you want to get a t-shirt. I know you're always looking for it. Hardy, I'm always looking for you to say something that's less than 7 words that I could slap on a message tee. Okay, Dead Said Don't, then. Or that's my band, because it sounds like Right Said Fred, and it's the same construction. I bless you. So they are, the dead are overrepresented. They're everywhere, and they're just their opinions and their stuff. We got to keep using their stuff. Say, nope, that's the way it is. Say, well, I don't know if I'd like to, nope. Dead said no. So I say I turn towards the living. We're so afraid of the living and afraid more. I'm afraid of those who haven't been born yet because their ideas are probably great. But I'll be gone, which is also good. Or maybe it'll be me. I've been thinking that recently. It's getting older. So I'm thinking, what if there is reincarnation? Well, here's the memory thing. Probably won't be bringing those memories. And then the assembly of the memories is overrated. Because let's say my grandmother never does get her memories back, but she stays sort of intact as an entity or something. Well, she's going to be diminished. It's strange and even unnecessarily scared or frightened. Does it matter? Does it matter? What's at the essence? What is beyond the information? Are the feelings entities in themselves? Is joy a living thing? And it uses us? It's temporary jumps from plant to plant and beast to beast, perhaps. Perhaps a lot of these things stay among the living. And that's why, because they preserve some element of the dead as they journey through our heads. I noticed that the way I talk about the Three Stooges or Gilligan's Island or All in the Family or stuff like that, it was on TV when I was young. Some of the predates me, right? I mean, it was on TV when I was young, but it was from a long time ago in the same way that I could be watching a Shakespeare play that's talking about Rome. And all these conventions from a former time come back. And we recycle and we're just living in a beautiful melange of perfume made out of these experiences with pretensions and ambitions to be poetic and describe our world using the elements. That's what art is. That's what I'm trying to do each week here, is just describe my world, which is also coincidentally your world. When I say my world, I'll say it's from my perspective, my limited one, but I thought that's what we were doing. We were all looking at a little bit of the elephant and say, my bit is, here's the difference. So there's that old thing where the five blind men are looking at There's an old bit where the five blind men are touching an elephant, and the one goes, has the ear in its hands to say, the elephant's flat like a pancake. You know this dumb thing, right? Well, first of all, they're all a bunch of idiots, because they should, as a unit, say, let's go experience the elephant. And then the ear guy should be saying, my part of the elephant is flat like a pancake.
My part of the elephant is round like an elephant leg umbrella stand, which they don't have anymore because that's horrifying.
I know. I saw one on the old Andy Griffith show.
I saw the same thing. Opie was just walking around with an elephant leg umbrella stand as if it were nothing.
How do they even do that?
I don't know. I think they're real, too.
If we were all, what I just did was an example of feeling and describing the leg and telling you, and also understanding that my description was only part of the story, and that we combine them with these constant experiencing. And the thing that is wrong is this declaration that the whole elephant is flat like a pancake, and you're missing out on the complexity and the strangeness and the beauty. An elephant at its best is like a southern folk artist, a southern performance artist with a funny hat on, who doesn't care whether you think it's art brute or high art, whether they went to art school or whether they learned this in a bar. It's funny or it's joyful, and that's what matters. We go through this with music all along. I must determine the authenticity of a thing. Well, and how do I know it's not a machine making it? Well, it's always a machine making it if you're looking at a machine and it's coming out of a machine. So I don't know what to tell you. So even if it's the Beatles and it's coming through your computer, that's a machine. So I don't know. But you know, if you go hear a human make music, what? Could you do it with more? Okay. If you go hear a human make music, then there you go. I just like to digress for just 2 seconds, and I promise I'll come back. But I was watching a little bit of that Ben Stiller documentary about his parents, and I would just like to say, for the record, as a kid, I thought their names were Stella and Mirror. Like a mirror that you look in, and Stella, like Aunt Stella. But it's not. It's he's Stiller and she's Mira. That's an old, what was that old sitcom that was like that? I'm so-and-so, he's blurblinblob. I'm Hardy, he's, I don't know, Bucci, or somebody who isn't Hardy. I don't know why I picked Bucci. I don't know. I guess it's a good shout-out. So people in the comments like, I know, he said Bucci. What did he say about him? Nothing. I'm going to just drop names of other people on the station, but no opinion or anything like that. People won't know whether I like them or, here's a hint.
I like everybody.
I always like people I'm not supposed to like. You like so-and-so? Yeah, why? It's because it's the lack of familiarity. My heart is so full of love and acceptance, all y'all, because of how I'm not around you. Is that right? Yeah, I think it is, because I'm not giving you a chance to dissuade me, I guess. Don't try to prove me wrong. You're lovable. First glance, you're lovable. I don't know about after that, but you're worth it. My goodness. I think also I feel as if I'm saying things randomly, that in a way, first of all, I'd like to thank WFMU and CAN for even allowing this to happen. It's happened on the station before, but the chaos of my content is liberating, not just for me, but for people who listen to it, because they think, oh my God, this is on the radio. Perhaps my cynicism was misplaced. You know, because everything that we hear is so canned and formulated, right? And everything you think it's all planned, everything we hear, and mostly it is on podcasts, even on television, anything where there is an element of money and somebody who's talking to you is making a profit, they are going to be, and I don't blame them, calculated about it. And because we know so much about communication, learned through the evolution of psychology from the 19th century until now, translated into advertising and public relations, we now have it down to a science. And when you are listening to most things, they are constructed in such a way that your response has been anticipated over and over and over again. And what you're hearing from old Hardy White is doing and undoing. What you are hearing is something like a smell without a source, something that can't be held on to, something ephemeral, something fleeting, something just for you, that demands nothing of you, and you hear it's like, look, right? Another good thing about not being in a studio is no one rushes in when that's happening and goes, oh, stroke, is it a stroke? And the bad thing about not being in a studio is if it were a stroke, I don't know, then I guess I'm in trouble. I was looking around for my phone. I'm good. I'm good. I could yell for the elderly dog, and she would come lick my face as I die. So I think that's a good thing. I don't need saving necessarily. Just comforting. I just don't want to be scared. Dead's no problem. Oh, you bless me. I hope this is my smell show. I was wanting to have more of a smell show. It was like an old perfume show even, like I did with Bronwyn a few years back, and that was fun, and we could name scents and things. And this was, a chaotic, poetic tribute to smell memory, which is something that means a lot to me. But it also is a love letter to you. There you. I'll tell you what my love letters do not contain. Do you like me? Just yes, no, maybe. Because here's how I see the world. You like me. Yes, no, and maybe. All at the same time. Or all through time. That's a better way of putting it. Because it is, I've been on the radio long enough where you go through people's lives. You have listener exes or something. And it's not your fault. It's nobody's fault. Kids, just listener and broadcaster grew apart, and we still respect one another. We just now we loathe one another and disgusted by one another, but we still will give you presents. So I don't know. I don't know how that'll work. I love you. Oh my goodness, listener friends. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org worldwide. Oh my gosh, can you believe how fast the time goes in general as well? We've been together now I don't want to date the show, so I want it to be evergreen. So I don't know, I think my voice has changed since I got on the... Hey, even though I've just started on the show, did I used to talk like that? Time has gone by so much. 13, 14 years, something like that. Some people have been on, I won't say who it is, but somebody's been on WFMU since the 20s, the 1920s. And it's not Irwin. It's not the old codger. Do you not know about this? Do you not know about the vampire? Am I the first one? Do you guys not go in the basement at Monty Hall? Oh my. Okay. There's an undead fella in the basement of Monty Hall. That's where I'm leaving it. Love you. See you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.